Welcome to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. This is where songwriters find inspiration every time. Hello and welcome back to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. This is Carl Brody. I'm talking to you from the clifftops of Sydney, where I don't mind telling you there's a chill in the air. It's May already, and this is what happens in Australia. You get no warning. They just change the month, and then things get chilly. being from Scotland, of course, it's not too bad, and I can cope with it, I think. Maybe I'll need a few more layers, a scarf. That'd look ridiculous in Sydney right now, though. But I'm certainly enjoying the sunshine today, even though it's a bit chilly. So would someone please tell me where April went? I just had another listen to Caitlin's interview that I'm about to show you before I put it together and post it. And I can't believe that. I know that there's been a couple of episodes released since then, but I can't believe it was a month ago already. April, where are you? I barely even remember you. And if anyone out there sees April, can you please say hey from Carl? So today I've got a great interview for you. My friend Caitlin Harnett is a wonderful singer-songwriter. And I've known her for a very long time. And it's great to see her blossom and grow as an artist. And in particular at the moment, she's just made a stunning record over in Canada, which, as you'll hear in this interview, she's very excited about. And I'm really excited about it because I've been lucky enough to witness a young, budding singer-songwriter since the age of 13. So now 10 years later, I've seen her grow into a woman who sings with all her heart and has really matured as an artist as well. Anyway, enough of that, because you'll hear lots more in the interview. And at the end of this, I'll share all kinds of links where you can connect with Caitlin, and of course links to her music too. So here goes. Enjoy. Okay, I'm really happy to bring to the Inside Songwriting Podcast my friend and wonderful singer-songwriter Caitlin Harnett. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Are you happy to be here?
You forgot to say that I was your little sister as well.
Yes, I'm a little sister. Being someone that lives on the other side of the world, I've got to tell you, it's great to have friends that over the years become like family. Caitlin Harnett, and you've just come back from Canada.
Yes.
Which I am fearful that we're going to lose you.
I think you might.
Well, it sounds like you had an amazing recording experience there.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to talk to you about today, as well as your songwriting and what you get up to in the world of songwriting. So first of all, we'll talk straight away about, I reckon, about your Canadian trip.
Okay.
Because I know it was a few months ago now, but it's really exciting because you've got your album coming out soon.
Yes, I do, hopefully in May.
And what's it called?
The River Runs North.
See, why couldn't I say that a few minutes ago?
The River Runs North.
Three times really fast. The River Runs North. The River No, I'm glad. I wanted to talk to you about the album, but also and the experience. And I wanted to talk to you about the songs that are on the record. Not every one of them specifically, but I think the first thing I want to ask you is, so you've done two EPs already.
Yeah.
And actually you've done three EPs because we did one together.
Oh, yes, we did.
And there's been a noticeable change and in your songwriting.
Yeah.
And I know what I saw. Watching your maturity and your progress. And I wondered if I could just ask you how you see it with that shift, because there was, to me, there was a significant shift in your style. Yeah, what do you think happened there?
I think when I first recorded when I was younger, I was really lucky to get to work with Matt Fell, who produced both my EPs. And he, at that point in my life, I didn't really have a strong idea of what direction I was going in, and I knew that I loved writing songs, and I guess I was writing in a more pop pop way, and Matt brought that out. And I think now when I've recorded this album, I've had, I think it's been 2 years since I last recorded, and I've kind of been listening to a lot more music and I guess broadening the spectrum of what I'm listening to. And I'm obviously a lot older, and well, not that much older, I'm 23, but I have, yeah, a stronger idea of what I want to, what sound I want. And when I went to record, I had more say in what I was doing. And, you know, I made a conscious effort to kind of put more of myself into the recordings than probably what I did when I was younger. And so I think the shift has kind of come from that, and from, yeah, the music I'm listening to and knowing exactly what I want to sound like. That makes sense.
It does. It's totally understandable. And I think it's really common as well for when we're younger, we sort of we fall into the things that we're led to as well.
Yeah.
And then we start to understand whereas we want to be. And that usually is dictated by the kinds of songs we start writing as well.
Exactly.
But it is interesting to me that you think that a part of that was you listen to a lot more different styles of music and more music, because I've always seen you as someone from an early age where you've had an amazing range of music that you listen to.
I've always listened to a really, I guess, big range of music, but I've probably appreciated it a lot more and soaked it in a lot more at an older age, I think.
That makes sense. And also it sounded to me like you, not only did you appreciate that music, maybe still, but you also started to express yourself in a more assured way and in a more mature way.
I'm a woman now.
Well, that's what I was going to say, even to the point where your voice made that shift from being a little girl.
It's so different.
I agree with what Matt did on your, what Matt Fell did on your EPs. Was wonderful.
Yeah, it was.
And it served the songs, which is what a great producer does.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've kind of, I guess when I was younger as well, I think to a certain extent I was actually trying to sound like other people, whereas now I kind of have just, I do obviously sound like other people now, but I'm not thinking about it. So I've kind of just let myself sing naturally, which I think, or for me, when I listen back to my EPs, I think I'm putting on this little cute little girl voice, and now I'm just singing how I naturally sing.
I don't think you're alone with that one. I bet you there's a lot of listeners that can resonate with that.
Yeah.
And I know I certainly can. It can be, you know, I think that if I was to sit here and play you one of my albums from years and years ago when I lived in London, I would probably blush.
Yeah.
I'd probably feel embarrassed at what is so noticeable to me now. But then I thought I was the man.
Yeah, I know.
I think we relax, don't we? We relax and get into a comfort zone with how we really want to express ourselves.
Yeah.
How we deliver it.
Yeah. And I think the older you are, the more you have to write about, the more you experience, the more you have to write about as well. So I'm, you know, traveling and, you know, going to Canada, especially on this last trip, has just changed me. And I've, you know, I'm going to be writing a lot more, I don't want to say meaningful songs, but I guess a lot songs that kind of mean a lot more to me because I've experienced so much more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what's important. And that is the word you're looking for, because when something's more meaningful to you, that's when you've reached that level of maturity that you want to express it.
Yeah.
And
although I have been writing some typical broken-hearted love songs.
But that's the beauty of it, you know. And when you're more, I think that was the other thing. You become, I mean, there have been some incredible songs written at really silly early ages. And I don't know how that happens. That's part of the magic of songwriting. But I think that with travel and with experience and the more songs you write as well, and as you mature and you write more and more songs in different environments, you're more able to articulate yourself you use the right language to say the things you want to say.
Yeah.
And that's great. And that means that, you know, the corny ass love songs that you're writing, that I'm not saying you did, but that we write young. I didn't get in there with that. It means that they have more depth as well.
Yeah, that's true.
They can be more powerful and we can sort of say things just that little bit better each time. So the whole Canadian experience has obviously really impacted on you as a person. But so with your choice, because we just spoke about Matt Fell, your friend and mine, he's also produced an album of mine as well, which I think is...
my favourite album of yours.
I was just going to say a lot of people list that one as their favourite of mine as well. And it really is he's a very talented producer and he's served all of those songs well.
A musical
I think
wizard.
We're going to have to throw him a link to this episode because it's the Matt Fell Appreciation Society. But I mean, just like I did a few years ago where I had the opportunity to ask someone else to produce my albums, and I came across someone in Austin that had done some work before that I really loved, and I just actually got around to asking whether or not they would want to produce me, and it worked. Yeah.
People.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Like another mutual friend of ours, Stuart Koop, who, as you know, signed me to his label years ago. Yeah. I remember him saying that back then. He wanted to...
Yeah, well, that's
to,
where I got it from. I stole it from Stuart. Yeah, Stuart's always saying, Caitlin, they're just people too. You just got to ask.
Well, there you go, because...
Stuart Koop Appreciation.
Yeah, Laughing Outlaw Records, everyone. One of the coolest little labels around, not just in Australia, but their reach is far and wide. He was pushing me to ask T-Bone Burnett to produce me.
Oh, really?
Way back when I was signed to his label with my album Nowhere Now Here. And I was like, are you kidding me?
I did actually
send T-Bone an email or something. I can't remember if it was MySpace or something. And I never, ever heard back.
Yeah, I did that with Ethan Johns.
why couldn't I predict that? And so I just wanted to know, like, why do people make the choice on particular producers, and what led you to choosing and asking Dave Droves?
Dave Droves, that works.
The river run.
Well, I guess for me, the reason I wanted to work with a producer first off is because, I mean, I'm not a multi-instrumentalist and I'm not not that a producer necessarily does all that, but I guess like I have ideas of where I want the songs to go, but I think it's really important to work with someone else because they've got their own ideas, and when you bring that together, then it's just a whole bunch of crazy, awesome ideas. So I guess that's why people want to work with, you know, pick producers to work with. You know, I guess you've got to look that. Well, from that, you've then got to go and look. Okay, well, what records do I like? Who's produced them? Can I email them or send them a MySpace message, and just do it? You know. But the reason I chose to work with Dave Droves, Dr. Dre, as I like to call him, is because he'd produced a record by Kathleen Edwards that was always been my favourite record.
It's a great record.
It's called Failure. Yeah, since I was probably like 15, and Matt Fell actually got me onto that record.
Ah. That's a nice sequence.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's weird. I mean, my dad had always loved Kathleen Edwards, but I think when I went to record with Matt was like, you need to listen to this record. So it kind of, made me go and do it. And then I've just been obsessed with her. And so I just sent Dave, actually think I got my publisher, Mr. Bill Page, to send Dave an email, and Dave got back to us within a week. And then the next minute, Dave and I were Skyping, and we were just both on the same page about everything. You know, I wanted to do everything really organically, and I wanted to record to tape and do everything live.
Is that what you did? Did you do this on analog?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's good to hear.
Yeah. So.
And that explains the warmth.
Yeah, it does. And that's what I wanted. I wanted that to really come through, and everything was recorded live. We overdubbed like horns and strings, but all of my vocals and the band takes were all done live.
Well, it would be quite something to nail those horns and strings in one take while you're doing the rhythm. I mean, these days, it's just not expected.
No, that's not expected.
And for the listening experience as well, it's worth getting it right by overdubbing things
definitely.
Like that.
Yeah, definitely. And there was a point where with a couple of the songs, I wasn't sure about my vocal takes, so we did do separate vocal takes, but then when it came down to it, the live ones were just better. They just had more warmth.
So do I remember correctly,
them.
Did you tell me that all the vocal takes are live takes?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah. It's a good feeling afterwards, isn't it?
I've only done that on
one album, and it's great.
That's
it's
what
feeling.
I wanted to do. Like, I was like, I'm a musician. Like, if I can't sing my songs, why should I bother recording them?
Yeah, it's always a question, isn't it? Because you're
for
playing,
me personally.
Well, you play week in, week out, and you play and you're there with your guitar, and you play your songs perfectly well with a lot of meaning.
Yeah, it's different when you get into the studio.
Yeah, so the stopping and starting and recording things separately in a lot of ways doesn't make any sense, even though it's it's common practice to do to make records like that. That's really cool. And so obviously, you wanted to pick Dave Draves.
Yeah, Dr. Dre.
Dr. Dre, because you liked his work that you'd heard before, which is a similar experience to mine. And then also it was someone that you felt like you could entrust the reins.
Yeah, we just connected, and I mean, we only Skyped probably two or three times, but then...
But how else do people connect these days,
right?
Let's face it.
I know. But I sent him songs, and then he sent me back what he what he thought he'd do with the songs, and it was just exactly what I had wanted. And he was also, introduced horns, and I was like, I would never, ever would have thought to use horns, but now I would never want to record a record without having horns on it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that if that was a happy accident, because what he heard, then it's kind of, it's the record has a lot of charm anyway.
Yeah.
But the horns are what gives it a little bit of an extra charm for me. And it's probably just, because I know you and haven't heard horns on your songs before. Yeah. But it really does, it kind of provides a bit of a central thread for the record as well.
Yeah, I think so, because they kind of come up in a few songs and we've got strings in a few songs. It kind of keeps a pattern going.
That's great. And so were all the songs written before you went to Canada?
Yep.
And what was the selection process like? Were they all decided? Or?
See, in my mind, I had like 11 songs that I was like, yep, they're going on the record. I'm not changing my mind. Yeah. And then when I got there, Dave was like, we're just going to record all of the songs you sent me. And I sent him like 17 songs. And he's like, he wanted to keep the spectrum like broad and, so that we'd have because I guess he's done this a lot of times, so he knows, you can go into the studio and record something and it just doesn't sound the way you imagine it to. Yeah. Or
I think it's really wise to record more than you think.
It was such a good thing to do. And it was basically like we would, because everything was live, we had the whole band, we would just record, we'd do one or two takes. And you kind of know straight away if it's working or not. You kind of listen back to it and go, okay, we're going to leave this one for now and work on these ones because these ones are definitely going to be on the album, and then we'll come back to those and listen to them later. So we recorded 17 songs, and there's probably about 4 songs on the record that I had no intention of putting on the record.
That's great.
And a couple that I really wanted to but just didn't come out.
So how many made the final cut?
12.
So we might
we couldn't decide.
We might have a B-side or a rarities thing in the future with those other 5
definitely.
Songs.
Yeah,
that's great.
I've already got a little B-side thing that I've made up that I'm selling at my house concerts, but they're limited edition. So if you want one, you have to have a house concert.
You heard it there. Well, I'm going to be leaving links of how you can contact Caitlin after the show, and if you want to have a house concert, especially in later this year in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
At the time of recording this, it's March. No, it's the 1st of April in 2014.
It's April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day. This is not a joke, though, okay? This is a very serious interview.
Very serious.
So, yeah, the album's not due for release for another couple of months, which is another privilege we have talking about it today. But you know, you might be discovering this podcast maybe in May, and it might be released. So just check out the links on the show notes, and I'll if you do want to have a house concert, that's what Caitlin does. What's it called? Mikasa Sukasa.
Mikasa Sukasa, but really, it's just your house, not mine.
But it's yours for the night if they welcome you.
It's true. It's true.
So okay, so we've given Dave a good mention. Who were the other musicians?
Jim Bryson. So he played like a really big part on the record. It wouldn't, like, a lot of it wouldn't sound the way it does without him.
I'd heard a lot about him through Kathleen Edwards.
Yeah, so he plays with Kathleen, and he's recorded an amazing album with a band called The Weaker Thens, who I really love. But Jim is just one of those, like, ridiculously crazy talented musicians who can just do anything.
So don't we love those people and hate those people?
He played lead guitar, but he also played piano, and he played some tenor. He played bass on a song. But I just have this memory of us recording one song, and we're doing this live. It was me, a drummer, and Jim. He was playing organs, and I'm singing, and next second I hear this, what was it? I think he was playing like a one of the big,
the big B3,
there's like a couple of different types of organs, I don't know, but he was playing one of them.
Was it a Rhodes or a Whirly?
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah, he was playing the Hammond, and then like next second I hear this, the B3 or something coming through like my headphones whilst I'm singing, and he's like playing, he's like playing two organs at once.
Oh, right.
And I was like, this is blowing my mind. I was trying to concentrate on singing, and I'm like, how is he doing this right now? He's just making it up on the spot, and it sounds incredible.
Wow. So, there's no wonder there's such an earthy energy on the record.
Yeah. So he had a huge part in like the production. But also I had Phil Charbonneau playing bass, who is an amazing bass player. He's like, all the guys were from Ottawa. So there's Phil on bass. I had Olivier Fairfield on drums, and I had Peter Von Alten on drums as well. So I had two drummers because I'm a rock star.
Right. Did they have double kicks going on?
No. They played separate songs. I think Dave had in mind like a couple of songs that we needed kind of like a big kind of rock style drumming, which Pete does, and he's also played with Kathleen. And then Olivier is just like the groove master, so he's kind of...
It's a great idea.
Oh, yeah. It was a really good idea. You can really tell the difference. And yeah, that was my band, my French-Canadian band. They're pretty sexy.
Well, not only that, because I did see Instagram craziness throughout your whole trip, and they are devilishly handsome, all of them. But it sounds like you found a great group of musos.
Yeah.
And you found the perfect producer who you could be really comfortable with straight away, but you also made some great friends.
Yeah, I did. I made lots of friends who I miss.
Don't worry, you'll be back there soon.
Yes, I'll be back there very soon in June, actually.
And since then, because I know what it's like when you finish a record, I always feel like the slate is clean again once I've finished recording. Did you go on a bit of a writing frenzy after that?
Yeah.
So I know you were traveling as well, weren't you? You went down south.
I didn't write a lot when I was traveling. Like I wrote a song. Like, I remember writing a song backstage. It's actually the title track to my record, but it's not on the record. But we did record it. Like, I wrote it backstage at a show, and then I finished it off in a music store in Boston, which I've never done before. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I'm writing, you know, on the road. And I called Dave straight away, and I was like, I'm coming back to Ottawa. We're recording this song. Like, it has to be on the album. But it didn't end up making it. But
that's the excitement as well of new songs.
Yeah.
And you don't want to upset your producer who's already doing a good job for you.
Exactly.
I remember that song well, and you sent me an MP3 of it at the time.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And it just, it'll probably go on my next record, and it just didn't, it didn't fit, and we didn't need it. We'd already finished recording. But yeah, and then I guess when I got home, I wrote a lot. I was, I met a lot of good people there, and I fell in love and fell out of love. Which is exactly
what a 23-year-old singer-songwriter should be doing.
Yeah, so I've got lots to write about.
Yeah, that's great. And so your plans now, you've got less than 2 months before the album's released, and that's going to be here in Australia.
Yeah.
And then you've got some festivals overseas.
Yep, I'm playing at North by Northeast in Toronto in June, which I'm so excited for.
Yeah, that's great.
But before that, I'm going to be in Melbourne next week, and then I'll be in Adelaide at the end of May, and I'll be in Darwin, which is like my first trip to Darwin.
I was just about to ask, have you been there before?
Nope.
Well, you know, all this talk of crocodiles up there, it's true.
Yep.
And
I'm going to capture one.
No, it's not about capturing them. It's about making sure you stay away from the shoreline at night. You can actually go down to Darwin Harbour at night and shine a torch over the water and you see all their eyes.
Really?
Yeah, and I played
terrifying.
I did a tour of the Northern Territory a couple of years back, and we were told that not to go to your car at night in the car park.
Really?
Because
of crocodiles?
Yep.
Oh, yep. I don't want to know that.
One of the places, one of the islands we played on up there as well, there was one had come onto the resort, and they had to shoot it, unfortunately, the night before.
That's
sad. So they are everywhere.
Okay,
it's not a rumor.
I'll be careful, thanks.
But that's great. You're getting around, and you're, going to be promoting and playing your new album all over the world by the sounds of things before the end of the year. So you're going to be at Americana in Nashville again, Americana Conference.
Oh, you know it.
No, you know I've been there with you before. What would you say are the best things about that? Because I know that it's part music and it's part fun.
Yeah, it's like a lot of fun. And then a little bit of music. No, it's just, I highly recommend going. It's an incredible festival. I think the most enjoyable thing about the festival is that, I mean, obviously everyone's just there for the music, which is like most festivals, everyone just is there for the music, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's just got this warmth about it. Like everyone's so excited. Everyone's, you know, just wants to go out and watch music, and you go out and see music, and then, you know, Emmylou Harris is standing next to you. Like, doesn't really happen.
Last year you were hanging out with Jacob Dylan.
Yeah, yeah. And Ed Helms.
Yep.
Like
it is one of those experiences. I remember I met up with another friend of ours for lunch, or for Corona's at lunchtime, Corona's, which is kind of the same thing as lunch when you're in Nashville. And she had the night before, she had got a lift with Rodney Crowell.
Wow.
You know, and just things like that do happen.
Yeah. Oh, the year before I was talking, my friend and I spotted Spooner Oldham, and who, for those of you who don't know, he played, you know, with Neil Young. And we just went and talked to Spooner Oldham and his wife for about half an hour. And I was just like, this is heaven.
Yeah. But I mean, even out of conference time, like Nashville is a place where that sort of thing happens.
Yeah.
But I know that you make the most of it when you're there. And so you were on the official showcase list for the Americana Conference as well.
Yeah, that was in 2012.
Yeah, that was the last time I went there. And it was
Oh, yeah, because I'm forgetting I went there at the end of last year. It all kind of blurs.
You're I've there been every there
three
year
times. Yeah.
And so you're going to do a few shows there this year as well?
Hopefully,
And that's September?
September 17th to 22nd, I think.
Great. And I think you've done a little bit of co-writing there, haven't you? But not much.
Yeah, I have. I've written with a few people. Trent Dabbs, I'm going to name drop him because you should go check out his music because he's awesome and he's, you know, just become a friend, I guess. And
yeah, he's a brilliant writer.
I've written with
Trent a few times, and he's one of the first artists that I sort of went to Nashville and back in 2007 or 2008 when I went the first time. He was one of the first bands that I went to see where I realized that Nashville wasn't all about country music.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've got loads of his records, and we stay in touch as well.
Yeah, he's a really great guy.
Yeah. So are you going to do any writing this year when you go there?
I think I'll probably do some of my own writing.
That's good.
But yeah, I've been just concentrating on writing for myself, I guess, at the moment.
It's a different mindset in Nashville, yeah, isn't it? Because everyone's writing every day.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can get caught up in that and it can kind of become a little less meaningful. In a sense, I've done co-writing there where it's kind of just like get in and get out, you know, just write a hit song and that's it. And for me personally,
I've found is that when I go there, I know that about Nashville. Yeah. So I prepare. So
you prepare.
And then I'm ready on each appointment. That was air quotes.
Yeah.
I'm ready for whatever the session turns into.
Yeah.
And more often than not, they're after the hit, your new co-writing partner. But you do come across people who are just like us, and we're much more interested in writing for the joy of writing a new song.
Exactly.
And hopefully it's going to be a great song, regardless of where it might go after that.
Because I think, especially for me, I'm not very methodical in my writing, or, you know, like I kind of just sit down and it comes out like word vomit. And I find it really hard to sit in a room for a few hours and concentrate and try to, you know, get a song out. I just can't do it. I'm bad at it.
Sorry, I think another interesting thing and a more important thing in terms of your approach to songwriting that I've observed over the years is that even at a very young age, and I've known you since you were 13, at a very young age, there was never an commercially driven aim with your songwriting process, which I think is, even though you said earlier on that you were writing more in a pop style, you were never commercially driven with your writing.
Yeah, and I didn't think about it whilst I was writing, but, you know, I know a lot of people that do kind of worry about that when they're writing, and I just have to say to them, just you can't. Like, you have to just sit down and write. Don't think about the rest of it.
That's right.
That's what songwriting is about, really.
Well, as we've spoken about on this show in the past, anything other than that is mere speculation.
Yeah.
You know, it's about writing, being truthful with your expression and coming up with the best song you can come up with at the time.
But we're hippies, and, you know, I guess some people write, like, that's just how they like to write, I guess, and that's the way that they do it. It's very different, you know. I don't think it's like a job to us, and for some people it is a job, and that's okay too.
What I like is the challenge. I'm not commercially driven as a person, but I'm over the years,
really?
I've become thanks for that. Over the years I've become adaptable enough as a co-writer to get myself right into a situation like that and work it.
But that's one thing I admire about you, because you can do that. Like, you are very focused and, I guess, motivated, whereas I'm potentially a little bit lazy with things like that. I'll just be like, not doing it.
Well, thank you. But your strength is definitely in the depth of your songwriting, and especially that you've been writing these kinds of brilliant songs for years. So even as a youngster, and I think that, you know, sometimes pop can be a little bit of a misleading word.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm going to leave links to your other EPs as well. Yep. Because, well, I waited so long for you to make this new record, and I know I'm lucky enough to have a copy of it before it's released, but there's a lot of depth in those songs.
And
I think it's always great if people start at the beginning as well.
Yeah, me too.
I like to recommend that.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? This is early days because your new album's not out. Your first full-length album, which is really exciting. I'm going to be at the launch, and if for some reason I can't be, then I'm going to be raising a glass to your butt. Yeah, well, that too. But I'll be raising a glass to my wee baby sis, wherever you are in the world, watching this new record fly.
Yay.
And thanks for being a guest on this show. It's pretty casual. See, it wasn't scary, was it?
I know, not scary at all.
That's
it's
great.
It's kind of nice to have a serious conversation with you.
Because we're always goofing off. And we're about to head over to Coogee. I must do these recordings on Tuesdays a lot because I think I've said that quite a lot. We're both going to go over and play some music in Coogee for the Bunker Songwriter Sessions. So thank you once again, Caitlin.
Thank you.
I'll be leaving all the kinds of links where you can contact Caitlin directly and we can find her music. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, friends, I'm sure you enjoyed that. And, you know, for me, it's a nice treat talking to such a great friend on this podcast as well. I mean, you obviously have to sort of step outside of your goofy selves as buddies and sort of, you know, approach each other differently on an interview like this. But as you can tell, Caitlin's just such a natural person anyway, that it was really comfortable trying to be a little more professional with my friend. So Caitlin's out on the road right now, and I got an email from her a couple of days ago saying that she was driving hundreds of miles from theatre to theatre, and I think she's doing a lot of that trip on her own. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's been writing some songs on that trip too. And if you want to catch up with Caitlin, she's more than happy to hear from you. And you can check out all her tour dates and, of course, her music. So there's a couple of links here I'll give you now, and I'll also post them in the show notes for this episode. So you can catch Caitlin on Twitter. She's on Twitter at Caitlin Harnett, which is CaitlinHarnett. She's also on Instagram. She's a mad Instagrammer. So that's at the same handle, Caitlin Harnett. And she's on Facebook at Caitlin Harnett Music. And of course, at CaitlinHarnett.com. Now, if you feel like showing her some love and sending her a tweet or on any of those platforms and just letting her know that you've listened to this interview, I'm sure she'd be very grateful for that. And she's a very cheerful girl most of the time. So don't worry about contacting her on any of those links I've just given you at all. And also, you know, you can catch me on Twitter. I don't mention it very often, but I've got a couple of Twitter accounts. But the one I use for the inside songwriting arena is just at Songkarl, which is SNGKARL, no O in the song. Someone had that already. SNGKARL, or just type in inside songwriting and you'll find me on there. It's so good. I'm getting lots of new followers every week and the podcast is going nuts. So thanks so much. And again, if you love this podcast, jump on over to iTunes and leave it a review. Be very much appreciated. Thanks again for listening, friends. I'm so grateful that you're here. And I'm certain that you would have enjoyed today's interview with Caitlin Harnett. All the best.